I'm Blair Palmer, and welcome to the Punks in Suits podcast, bringing the leadership thinking, beliefs, philosophies, and practices behind punky, startup-y, next-stage businesses to you, even if your company's not quite there yet. Welcome to episode 47 of the Punks in Suits podcast. So good to have you here today. I have been speaking to lots of future guests for the show over the last week on everything from getting physically fit, so important no matter what you do, but particularly if you have a grueling role such as leadership. So everything from that to homeschooling, because I know people are becoming quite interested in that because I've talked about that a little on the show, to leadership development programs of the future. And I'll be sharing those interviews with you over the coming weeks. And I've also, this week, been working on a secret project, which I will be announcing in my 1 year anniversary show. Now, the eagle-eared amongst you will know that it's actually already been a year. We started the show in October 2016, and it's now November, or practically November 2017, so a little bit more than a year. But this is going to be an interview to celebrate 1 year plus a little bit, an interview with Ginny Bailey, who interviewed me in October last year for the very first Punks in Suits show. And I will be explaining to her how this show is going to be changing and also some personal changes in my own life that are happening in 2018. Those of you that follow me across all social media platforms may already know some of this, but for the rest of you, you will have to wait until that interview with Ginny to find out more. But anyway, back to today. Our guest today is Ryan Palmer. He's the co-founder of the London Sock Company, a former rising star at Accenture. He gave it all up to start his own venture a few years ago, and for me, represents the kind of business leaders that never had any intention of working for anyone else for long. Now, of course, there have always been people like this who've turned their backs on corporate world, but today those individuals can create global businesses from their living rooms and pose a real threat potentially to the companies that are stuck with big overheads and thousands of people that they have to corral if they want something to change. So whether you're thinking of starting your own venture, taking a leap to do something radically different to what you do now, or just wondering why it's hard to keep entrepreneurial talent in your company, I think you'll enjoy this interview. I certainly enjoy talking to Ryan myself. By the way, Ryan has generously offered a special deal to listeners of this podcast, and I'll give you all the details about that at the end of the show. And with Christmas fast approaching, hint, hint, I think you'll want to hear more about that. So that's at the end of the show, but without delay, here's the interview. I am so excited to welcome to the show today Ryan Palmer. Ryan, as I've just been explaining, is the one of the co-founders of the London Sock Company, but he's more than that. He is actually my cousin. I feel like I need to admit that because we share the same surname. It's not a coincidence, is it, Ryan?
It is absolutely not a coincidence, but thank you for having me anyway.
Well, I'm delighted, really, really. And it's been a while since I've been wanting to have you on the show, because there's lots of stuff that I want to talk to you about to do with the company, to do with, you know, you're one of this new breed of I hope you don't mind me describing you this way, but one of this new breed of entrepreneurs who has quite quickly come out of corporate life. So you didn't have 20 or 30 years in corporate life and then decide to run your own thing. You came out pretty early and has just created this very cool, very modern brand using a lot of social media, which is something we'll come back to build that brand. And it really is a business that's very much in the model of the kind of companies that come along up the blind side of more conventional businesses and steal a lot of market share for them, maybe even change their industry. So that's really why I wanted to have you on the show. So it's very, very exciting. And let's go back a few years, because we'll come to the business in a couple of minutes, but you were in corporate life, in quite conventional corporate life. How did you make that transition out and why?
So, I mean, I was working for Accenture, so a global technology consultancy company for 7 years. And I think for me, it was always a stepping stone. I think I always knew deep down that I wanted to start my own project or have my own business. But it was really getting myself into a position where I had learned as much as I thought that I needed to maybe reduce a little bit of the risk of doing it. And so from my perspective, it was really, you know, always wanting to kind of make that move, just about the right time of doing it. And there's never the right time to do it. But I think, you know, me and a really good friend of mine, you know, we're starting to brainstorm ideas together. And I think we were both emotionally checked out of that kind of corporate world and the corporate life that kind of comes with it. And it actually felt like quite a straightforward transition for me. A lot of people ask, you know, do you have any regrets? And I don't think for one second of 1 minute that I've regretted taking that leap and getting out of that world.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that you had checked out. Was there anything in particular that caused that? Because presumably when you joined the organization, you really saw yourself being there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw myself being there for a period of time. I don't think I ever saw myself being there forever. I think there's often a challenge with these big organizations where you start climbing the ladder, and the higher up the ladder you climb, the harder it is to get off. And I think because I was so clear in my head that this was not a ladder that I had any desire to go right to the top of, that it was probably a little bit easier for me to make that decision. But I think fundamentally it was following, you know, kind of my passion to want to actually contribute in my own way and to be able to make decisions that I was completely in control of and ultimately follow a destiny that I could put in front of me and not have to rely on, you know, kind of the parameters that a big corporation, you know, has.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there are people because you're a little younger than me, and not that much younger, but yeah,
just a couple of years.
Another generation, in a way. We there are people of your kind of age who are, you know, really committed to being part of a big corporation, and that is where they see their future. But I think increasingly that's not true. So increasingly there's this idea that, you know what, that used to be the way, that's the way my parents did it, and might be the way my grandparents did it, nice, secure career for life, move up the hierarchy, it's not for me. And kind of taking on board that, the risk that entails, but a deep belief that they're never really gonna join, or certainly not for a long time, be part of a business like that. Do you think that it is, in a way, generational, or do you see it very much as a personal decision?
I think a bit of both. I think, you know, it's a really good point that I think a lot of people struggle to see themselves making the move. But I think we're also at a very different time now. You know, I think a lot of people will say that it's never been easier to start your own business, you know, with technology, you know, with social media, you know, kind of, and with the opportunity to ultimately start from your bedroom. But it's also never been harder, because that has really reduced the barriers to enter. It's not difficult now to create a business of something and run it on a relatively small scale, you know, with relatively, you know, little investment for starters. I mean, you just look at the likes of Kickstarter. You can start a business without having actually saved any investment for it and let others invest on a good idea. But I think, you know, it also comes down to the personality. It comes down to how much risk you feel that you're comfortable taking. You know, because there is risk, you know, in certain elements. But I think for a lot of people, the personality element comes down to how you feel about risk. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, the risk of me not doing it was significantly higher than the risk of me doing it. Because the way that I justified it to myself, maybe it was justifying it to myself, it was, well, the worst that can happen is that I get an amazing experience, I meet some amazing people, and I go back and get another corporate job where I'll be actually more employable and probably demand a higher salary. So that was my worst case scenario. You know, and best case was that, you know, the business takes off and, you know, kind of I never look back.
And that is what's happened. It has really taken off. And I just think one of the things that's interesting is you've gone into fashion. Now, you've always been a cool guy, you know, you've always had a sense of style, but by your own admission, this wasn't an industry that you knew anything about. So
why go into something? You know, the easiest thing to do, and I think what a lot of people think of doing is, well, I'll take the experience I have in this business, in this corporate, and I'll do the same work, but I'll do it freelance, or I'll do it as a consultant. But you went into this other industry. What, I know this is going to sound a little rude, but what made you think that you would be all right in an industry you knew nothing about?
I think that's a good question, because we had no experience of fashion, of manufacturing, of branding, of marketing, you know, of supply chain in general. And I don't know, we just thought that if we create a strong enough business proposition and we really kind of think hard about, you know, the execution model, and we surround ourselves with people who have got experience, who have been there, who have done that, you know, that we'd be okay. And that's kind of been our motto, you know, right from the start, even to where we are now. And I mean, we're growing about 3 times year on year as a business. You know, we turned over, you know, kind of more than 7 figures this year, and every year brings a new challenge. So I don't think that that will ever stop. So I think, you know, surrounding ourselves with people who can really help advise and almost be mentors for the business and for us as individuals in our personal development, you know, has and continues to be really important. And I think that was the reason where we thought that actually, you know, let's just go for it. And I think secondly, when you go into an area that you have no experience in, it really focuses you to look at it in a different way and ask questions that maybe someone who's had their entire career in that specific industry has always just taken for granted. But maybe that's not the best way of doing it. Maybe that's not the best way of looking at a problem. And, you know, fundamentally, you know, a business should be about solving a problem. So I think for us, it was a positive, you know, touch wood that continues. But I think my instinct tells me that it will. But yeah, it was really more about surrounding ourselves with people who could help us on that journey. So we didn't really see that as a massive, you know, kind of hindrance to going into the business.
Something that listeners to this show will have heard me talk about before is the no ego idea, that, you know, as soon as your ego gets engaged and you start thinking that you know what you're doing or that you're right or that you need to be right, then it stops you really listening. It stops you being open. And from what you've just been saying, that was very much your attitude and remains your attitude, that you're wide open to advice, to mentors, to asking the question, you know, what do we do here? What are our options? What could we do? What are the kinds of people that you've managed to get into your network to help you, and how have you persuaded them to help you?
I think we've kind of almost looked at each segment of the business, you know, whether it's marketing, whether it's product development, whether it's, you know, kind of PR, whether it's, you know, kind of supply chain, and tried to find people who have, you know, had a lot of experience in that area, ideally from early stage through to more kind of mature stage of business. So I think it's really comes down to, first of all, just tapping into your network. Like, who do you know already? You know, it's amazing, you know, just by putting a comment into Facebook saying, does anyone know anyone, you know, kind of in journalism, how quickly you'll get a bunch of friends saying, yeah, I know this person, I know this person, or you should definitely talk to this person. And that's kind of how we started. And, you know, that kind of led us down a path really of just, you know, building the network and getting it stronger and stronger and stronger. To the point that we've now got David Gandy, you know, who's, you know, one of the most kind of, I guess, iconic kind of male models, you know, in the country, you know, certainly a fashion icon, you know, who we are very close with, you know, both from a brand ambassador perspective. Also, he's invested in the business on a personal friendship level as well. And, you know, he's someone who's got amazing business acumen, you know, who's got, you know, 14, 15 years experience in the fashion industry, and really understands the commercial element of the industry as well as the style and I guess the kind of the softer side of it, you know, right through to, you know, William Asprey, who's another one of our investors, you know, who's a fifth generation luxury, you know, kind of retailer. And surrounding ourselves with people like this, you know, we'll both extend the network. They'll introduce us to new people, you know, where we've got specific challenges. And, you know, we've kind of found ourselves in a very, very fortunate position where, you know, we really work hard at our network. We work hard at, at kind of making sure that we are, you know, kind of adding as much value to our network as we possibly can, whether that's, you know, actually we're aware of a really interesting event that we think that, you know, you might be interested in attending, and there'll be interesting people for you to actually come and meet. So it is really more of a balance of kind of give and take, as opposed to take, which is something that we're really, really conscious about.
So two things come up for me there. The first is this quite what's now old-fashioned idea that you have to hire a team of experts and consultants, and that particularly in the early days of a business, that's, you don't have very deep pockets, so that's pretty difficult to do. And the second thing that comes up is this more of a mindset thing, which is that, oh, well, what could I possibly have to offer to someone like David Gandy or William Asprey? So how did you overcome those two limiting beliefs, that you need a lot of money to pay consultants, and that, you know, you don't have anything to offer them that's as valuable as what they're offering you?
I think it's fundamental human nature to like to give people advice. And I think when we were looking for advice, we just asked, you know, some really interesting people, you know, the question of, you know, this is where we are on our journey, and, you know, it would be amazing to buy you a cup of coffee and have 50 minutes of your time, you know, to get your thoughts on a few specific areas. And it's amazing how receptive people are to providing that support. I think most successful people have had support at some stage in their kind of professional, you know, kind of life. And I think a lot of them are very, very happy to kind of give back, particularly where you make it as easy for them as possible. And I think you if you don't ask, you don't get. And I think that people often make a mistake of thinking, well, they'll never say yes, so why should I ask the question? And, you know, actually, you know, sometimes you need to be a little bit creative with how you get their attention, because I think the reality is they get asked all, you know, a lot of things by a lot of people, you know, probably less so, you know, startup entrepreneurs, more so people within the organization or people trying to do business with them. You know, they'll be inbound with a lot of you know, kind of emails and phone calls to reply. So it's how do you really kind of cut through that? How do you, you know, kind of come across like, actually I'm a little bit different, you know, and I think that you would enjoy meeting me as much as I would get something from meeting you. I mean, I think that having something to offer is something that develops in time. It's not necessarily something that is apparent straight away. But what's interesting is that as your network continues to expand, you find people who actually might be interested to meet each other. You know, whether it's, okay, we've developed a really good relationship with GQ and, you know, with the Rake magazine, and, oh, we've also developed a really good relationship with, you know, Dylan Hartley, who's the England rugby captain. How, you know, how could those two relationships actually benefit from each other? And it's looking for opportunities like that I think people are very receptive to, and it just re-emphasizes that desire to connect people where there's zero benefit for you, but actually you know that it's going to be something that could be of value to them.
Yeah, I think this is really good, and I think it applies even to listeners who are working in a big organization and have no intention of leaving that organization. Actually, you can feel a little bit like you don't have any influence, you don't have any impact. And actually this idea that, well, you could just ask people for their advice and for their help, and you could aim quite high. You could actually ask the CEO if he has got 15 minutes of their time to give you some advice. You could take somebody for a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, and you never know what the advantage for them might be until you try.
Yeah, and I think a lot of leaders struggle because people feel that they're unapproachable, that they operate on a different level, that actually if you knock on their office door impromptu and say, you know, hi, you know, I'm Ryan, you know, like, do you have 5 minutes? It would be really nice just to have a quick chat with you. That they're going to say, no, get out. And I think the reality is that they're leaders of the business. That's their responsibility, is to inspire, is to develop, is to understand what's going on at levels that they probably don't have so much, you know, kind of control or understanding over. So I think that they're often very receptive to that, and it's a bit of a breath of fresh air when people do that, because, you know, that is valuable for them. And it's a very easy thing just to try, you know. And, you know, hey, what happens if it doesn't work and they say, look, I'm busy, then what have you lost?
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. I know from the guys that I'm coaching that they would love if somebody, you know, 2, 3, 4 levels down in the organization came and knocked on their door and introduced themselves. They do feel really disconnected from the organization. And I'm encouraging them to listen and to connect within the organization and to form authentic human connections with people, and no one wants to talk to them. So I think they would be really delighted if someone kind of came along and said, I'll talk to you. Let's move on a little. One of the things that you said to me last time we spoke was that as much as anything, the organization, because I mean, you know, you're selling socks and you've got a really interesting business model, but it's socks. It's not complicated. But the way that you described the company was that you're basically a creative agency and you think of yourselves as a creative agency. And I thought that was fascinating because we live in this Instagram world where everyone's got beautiful imagery and everyone is a photographer and all of this. And I have realized this quite recently that it's not about just writing articles and being very wordy. It's also about having a business that is very creative and very uplifting and has beautiful imagery, which is something that you guys are great at. At what point did you realize that you were really a creative agency and not a sock distributor?
I think we realized that quite early on. I think we were in a meeting with someone and they were asking us to kind of explain, you know, what it was that we were doing. And I think they were just a little bit not particularly positive about, you know, kind of, well, you're creating a business in socks, like that doesn't sound particularly, you know, kind of new. You know, yeah. It's like this. I'm pretty sure socks have existed for quite a while now. And I think that moment there was a little bit of a light bulb, and I think it really kind of supported the importance of connecting with customers from the brand's perspective, and that actually when you really kind of reflect and you look across a lot of businesses, that there's not that many unique, you know, kind of selling points to businesses anymore. And it really comes down to more of an ESP, an emotional selling point, you know, which comes back to that connection with a customer. And then it's kind of trying to understand, well, what resonates, what connects with our customers. And, you know, before you can answer that question, it's really understanding who are my customers, who are they? And trying to work as hard as you can to understand who they are, you know, what inspires them, what drives them. And using that information to build campaigns and creatives and products that connect with them, that actually make them think, I really want to buy into this brand because I think what they're representing is really connecting with me. So I think when it comes to a product like socks or like any kind of item where, you know, actually it is very difficult to innovate. I mean, of course that there's areas that you can in terms of materials, in terms of tech, in terms of designs, but fundamentally it is really about that emotional connection with our customer, and that for us was really the defining point of knowing that for us to be successful, you know, we had to do everything as if we were a creative agency, because that is what connects with people. It's the creatives.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's never been more important than it is today, when we're overloaded with messages, people trying to sell to us, people trying to get our attention, and something that actually connects at a deeper emotional level is going to have the edge over something that is just transactional. So when you tell me about your customers, because I have this idea that your customers, the people that connect with that brand, are also quite similar to the sorts of people that work with me, but I'd be really curious to understand who they are and what it is that they're connecting with.
I think we've got a number of different customers. I mean, first of all, just kind of putting them into kind of male versus female. I mean, 50% of our customers are actually male and 50% of our customers are female. We do have a subscription where members are getting new socks delivered through the letterbox every month, but we also have the opportunity for people just to go onto the website and buy individual pairs or gift boxes. So when it comes to gifting season, you know, whether it's Father's Day, whether it's Christmas, we see a huge spike in sales, and that's often gift buyers who are more often than not female, often men as well, but we see a huge spike of female customers at that point. But we also have a lot of male customers who are buying for themselves, you know, whether it is signing up to our subscription or whether it's them just looking for a bit of a sock drawer refresh, and they're looking for some ways to add a bit of, you know, style and personality into, you know, what's often quite, you know, kind of standard professional attire. And then within that, we seem to have developed a number of different customer segments in terms of age. So, you know, if we look at our data, I mean, our customer demographic spans from, you know, kind of in their 20s right into their, you know, into their 70s, 80s. We seem to have really kind of connected with people at a younger age where they're seeing a lot of the celebrity endorsements. They're seeing, oh, well, Daniel Craig was wearing them for all the press and premieres for his James Bond movies. Plus David Gandy, who's a bit of a fashion icon, you know, through to a lot of Hollywood actors, you know, who are being styled in them. So that attracts a certain type of customer, you know, right through to the older customer, you know, kind of maybe the guy in his, you know, kind of 60s, 70s, who doesn't see himself as old, you know, and for him, it's all about connecting with, you know, kind of his younger side. It's about having that opportunity, like I said, to add a bit of style and personality. And that's something that's really important to them, you know, and right through to, you know, the 30 to 45, 50s, you know, who see an opportunity to, you know, get noticed for the right reasons, you know, in that professional environment. When they sit down and they cross their legs, they want to get noticed for that assured sense of style, you know, not a novelty sense of style. So we've really tried to create, you know, a brand that connects with people at different levels. But fundamentally, it is all about assured style. It's about, you know, people getting noticed for what we think are the right reasons. You know, when you're sat in that important board meeting and you cross your legs, that, you know, kind of someone's going to look at you and go, oh, you know, that's actually really cool. That's memorable. Not that, oh, well, you know, there's some Mickey Mouse socks that he's wearing, which is fine for some people. But that's kind of not where we're trying to position ourselves as a business.
Yeah. And it sounds like all of that is really about, maybe not so much the celebrity endorsement stuff, although I'm sure that there's a bit of that in there, but an expression of self, you know, that it may be hard for me in some aspects of my life to express really who I am, but there are opportunities and I want to do that. So the people at the older age of your kind of customer base saying, I want to express that on the inside, I'm still a young guy and I still care about how I look and this is still important to me to be fresh. In the middle, it's maybe people at the height of their career who, for other reasons, might feel like they can't express through their clothes because they work in a particular environment, but this is a way that they can feel like themselves. And in the younger age group, it's more aspirational. It's more, who do I want to be? Who do I admire and who do I want to use as role models so that I can become this person that I want to be? So this expression of self becomes really important.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I completely agree with that. And style is about being an individual. You know, style is about wearing something that makes you feel good, that increases your self-esteem and your self-confidence. And I think we kind of have tried to pair that with the importance of first impressions. You know, when you're walking into, you know, kind of any situation, you know, there's so many facts, you know, kind of the emphasize that someone is making a, you know, an initial judgment about you within however many seconds, and, you know, kind of the way that you come across, you know, in terms of your body language, in terms of, you know, kind of your expressions and what you're wearing, it does matter. It does have an impact. And, you know, we've seen a lot of really kind of fantastic responses from customers coming in telling us that, you know, our socks are now their lucky socks because they've been wearing them during big important, you know, kind of business meetings, and they've closed the biggest deal in their life, and they've almost kind of now paired, no pun intended, you know, kind of the socks with that emotion, because it does make them feel more confident. And I think fundamentally that's what style is about. It's about making people feel more confident about themselves.
I love that idea of lucky socks. I definitely have lucky clothes that I wear. More typically, well, it's almost always underwear. So, you know, socks and stuff, it does tend to be. It's not so much your lucky jacket. I don't know what that's about. But anyway, maybe too much information for you and our listeners. So tell me more about the digital side. So this is something that I think there are people, of course, in big business who understand digital. There are some very, very smart people working in the marketing departments and in product development and even in, you know, in disparate parts of the organization who understand digital. But I wonder if for those of us more used to kind of conventional ways of marketing and connecting with the audience, that there is something about digital that is a bit foreign. Is there a way that you can, because you make so much use of all of that, and like you said, you use Facebook to connect with people as opposed to LinkedIn, which is more kind of conventional business. You use Instagram, you have this beautiful photography. How, and then you talked about data, you talked about, you know, when we segment our audience. So you've got a really, really good understanding of who's coming and what they're buying and why they're buying it and all of that through the data. Can you help someone who's maybe listening to this, who's just slightly overwhelmed by what digital means for their business to start to see how it doesn't have to be so intimidating?
Yeah, I think for us, and certainly the way that I look at it, and I'm sure if you ask different people, they'll give you a different, you know, kind of perspective. But I think for us, digital is really just about taking people on a journey. And I think it starts with presenting someone with something that they're interested in, you know, whether it's a really nice image on, you know, Instagram or Facebook or whatever. But the objective of that is to get people to click on the image and engage with your website. And when someone engages with your website, you're then kind of getting them on a journey where you're now trying to capture their email address. You know, you're wanting to understand what is it that this person is interested in and what value can I give them. So for us, for example, you know, we've built quite a strong sales funnel, quite a detailed sales funnel, where, you know, there's three different stages to it. There's stage one, which is someone who's never had any exposure to the brand. There's stage two, where someone has engaged in some way but not purchased. And then there's stage three, where someone has purchased and we're looking to re-engage them and provide them with more, whether it's ideas or style tips, to ultimately try and get them to purchase again. Because I think with digital and particularly online businesses, you know, there's a few very important KPIs, you know, key performance indicators that actually dictate whether your business model can be successful. And that really comes down to how much it costs you to acquire a customer, which is based on the average order value that you get from a customer and the lifetime value of a customer. So what that customer will spend with you over a period of time. And I think digital is really taking people on that journey, and it's kind of looking at the right way to engage with someone at the right time. And it's not all free, you know, so ultimately, you know, digital is our biggest marketing channel, paid marketing channel. We do a lot of organic marketing through digital as well, but we're also investing in channels like, you know, Facebook and Instagram, and also bits on LinkedIn. But I think the importance is that journey element, and it's trying to come up with what are my challenges as a business to get that customer from being aware of my brand to wanting to learn more about my brand to actually getting some social proofs that other people, you know, kind of have had positive experiences about my brand, through to wanting to try it themselves. And that is really what digital in my kind of view is about. It's about helping people on that journey. And I think the real benefit of digital is also your ability to test faster, to try things and react. You don't need to launch a huge, you know, kind of campaign where, you know, you've got, you know, billboards everywhere and, you know, you've got you know, television marketing. Like with digital, it you know, you can test something on a relatively small scale to see what resonates, and you might have any number of you know, adverts on social media, on Facebook, on whatever, and then the ones that are resonating are the ones that you start turning up. You start saying, okay, well, these are working. Let's focus more on, you know, kind of pushing these ones and developing these ones, and let's turn off the other ones. So I think just the ability to test faster, it supports a much faster, you know, kind of speed of innovation. You know, you can create interesting content that is reacting to what people are engaging with. And, you know, fundamentally, it's a business. We're trying to inspire people to purchase our product and then repeat purchase our product. So it really is about how you take someone on that journey.
I think it's all great. And in fact, I'm really scribbling down here lots of ideas for my own business, because I think that, you know, that is a massive change. I mean, there never was the idea in the past of a journey. There was definitely the idea of your customer base has a need. They have some pain of some kind, and you're going to help them to solve that pain. But actually, what I hear more from you and from other people that I talk to in this kind of new wave of entrepreneurial businesses is, it's not so much pain, it's aspiration. It's not going where the pain is. So I know one of the things that you help people to avoid is having to go sock shopping. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't like sock shopping, and you could have built a whole brand around, you no longer have to go out and buy socks in the shops, you can buy from us. Firstly, that's not a unique selling point, because there's plenty of ways you can buy socks online, but also it's not terribly uplifting. And I think what you're talking about is something that draws people to it, that has them feel like this is a positive in my life, as opposed to just solving a problem that I have in my life. Now, I think that's really inspiring, and it certainly has got my juices flowing about how I might attract people to come and work with me. It's not so much about solving pain, because you're already starting on a negative, but, you know, you can love your job, you can love to lead, your work can be full of meaning and purpose, and that working on yourself and developing yourself can be this amazing growth experience, as opposed to, have you got problems with your boss? Have you got problems with your team? I can help you to have fewer problems. It's not an inspirational journey, is it, Pat?
No, absolutely. I think that's a really good point. And I think for businesses today, that connection is about inspiration. I mean, obviously, you need to be solving a problem of some sort, but that problem might be someone who's actually got a little bit lower self-confidence, or it might be someone, you know, who, you know, kind of has holes in their socks. You know, it doesn't matter. Maybe someone who genuinely loves fashion and style, you know, and it doesn't really matter what problem it is that you're trying to solve. The importance is that I think you understand your customers, and you understand, you know, what your brand is, what the solution your brand is for them. And that changes. I think that doesn't necessarily remain constant. It doesn't remain the same as your brand develops and it grows and it diversifies. You might be solving new problems or inspiring, you know, new kind of issues or areas or whatever. But I think it's that constant relationship with your customers that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things that you built into the business right from the beginning, if we're talking about relationship, we're talking about journey and sort of human connection, one of the things that you built in right at the beginning was this idea of giving back. So as we're recording this, it's October, but for you, this is Socktober. And you have various campaigns throughout the year that are giving back to people, to our society. At what point did you realize that was going to be important to you?
So Dave, my co-founder, and I have always been really passionate about wanting to contribute back. I think it's just something that we've always been inspired by, and it was always going to be a strong part of the brand that we were going to create. And when we first launched, it was a really kind of obvious decision for us to make. It was interesting because a lot of people actually suggested that we don't push a social agenda from day one. Actually we should be focusing on, you know, kind of acquiring more customers, and we should be focusing our time on our marketing, and we should be focusing our time on our product development. But, you know, it was a really important thing for us to genuinely want to support and to create. And we launched what we call our Pull Your Socks Up campaign right from day one. And the kind of the premise of that name is that pulling your socks up is one of the first things that most people do every day. And it was to serve as a daily reminder for us that no matter how busy we are and how many plates we're spinning, that actually we need to make time for contributing, you know, back to causes that are struggling. And, you know, over the last few years, most of the charities that we've got involved with have been through, you know, kind of meeting inspiring people at an event, or just reading about something and genuinely wanting to try and support. And it's not any more complicated than us coming up with an idea of how we think that we can help with that specific cause. And, you know, whether it's for Socktober, where we're working with Crisis to donate socks to homeless people this Christmas, or whether it's donating a percentage of our David Gandhi kind of collections in support of Style for Soldiers, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't need to be formal. It's as long as we are doing something that to us is kind of supporting that genuine desire to want to give back. That's the most important thing. And, you know, whether our social agenda formalizes more in time, you know, it's possible. But I think it doesn't matter how big or how small you are, that genuine desire to want to give back, I think, is universal for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading something about you guys actually just going out into the streets with socks and just handing them out to homeless people that you saw. It's very, as you say, very informal. It happens very quickly. It's not like in some big companies where, you know, it's all part of a corporate social responsibility campaign and they commit to a charity or to a cause for a very long period of time, and so therefore they have to really jump through a lot of hoops to make those decisions. It's very responsive what you're doing, very reactive and very agile is one way to describe it. Do you think that's because you guys are still quite a small business in terms of the number of people you have working there, so it's quite easy to make decisions? Or do you think that that is just the DNA of your organization, that it will always be there?
I think probably both. I think that because it's in the DNA of Dave and I to want to do this, then the culture of the business that we're creating, you know, will continue with that focus on reacting and wanting to support where we can. And as we grow and as we scale, that, you know, that is going to be something that is still important to us as a business. Whereas if you look at a lot of bigger businesses, then it's a lot harder. You know, it is difficult. There are a lot of hoops to jump through. There are a lot of, you know, kind of you know, marketing teams that need to sign off, or, you know, kind of branding guidelines that need to be adhered to. And, you know, that is important, you know, but I think fundamentally that it comes from the top down. It's about the leadership of the business, and it's about the culture that the business leaders are trying to set within the organizations. So we're very much trying to instill a culture within our company that this is really important, and, you know, we want to try and support wherever we can. You know, there will be situations where it's hard and we might not be able to, but, you know, more often than not, there is something that you can do, and it doesn't need to be big. And I think that's something that has been a really good lesson to us, that, you know, supporting a cause doesn't need to be a big thing. You know, donating some, you know, a really nice gift box of socks to, you know, to the British Heart Foundation raffle or whatever it might be is something that we can do. It's something that we're very supportive of. And, you know, it's not a lot of effort.
There's something, I'm just imagining some of the listeners to this show who are working in big businesses and are hearing you and thinking, God, we could really do with a few people like this in our organization. That there is something about corporate life, and I'm sure they have a few people like that already, but there's something about corporate life that kind of can make it very difficult to be entrepreneurial or to keep entrepreneurial people. Is there anything that Accenture or any big company could have done? Is there any way that they could have been different that would have made it possible for you to stay and to thrive and to be as creative, as entrepreneurial, as innovative as you are, but within a bigger company?
For me, probably not. I think the journey that I saw in front of me was as exciting as the opportunity to be creative and do something within the organization. I think Accenture is a really good example. They do really try and support entrepreneurship, and they try and inspire people to be creative and think outside the box. But I think the challenge is when you're running such a massive machine as a business, that there's real limitations and restrictions. You know, you can't have, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people off on their own agendas because they're passionate about something. It's really difficult to control that. But yeah, I think when it comes to the social responsibility part, you know, maybe it's being a little bit less, kind of formal. Maybe it's being actually, you know, we want to encourage people to do that. But then you look at charity days. A lot of the companies have charity days, and they're very free and open with whatever people want to use their charity days for. You know, they can do that. So, you know, maybe they're doing as much as they can. But I think from my perspective, there's nothing that would have kept me there. I think I was definitely, you know, kind of at a point where I knew that I needed to go and pave my own path.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, thank you so much. It's been a huge joy. And actually, like I say, I've got so many ideas for my own business from talking to you. So thank you very much. I hope you've had as much fun on the show as I have.
That's been brilliant. Thank you, Blair.
I really did enjoy that conversation. Could you tell? And I was madly scribbling notes that'll influence my special project and some other stuff that I've got planned for next year. So now to that special offer. Ryan has generously offered a 20% discount on any shop order or 50% off your first month subscription at the London Sock Company if you enter the code PUNK at the checkout. So just go to londonsockcompany.com and select anything that you want from there. There's so many brilliant products. And when you get to the checkout, enter the code PUNK and you'll either get a 20% discount if you've just done a normal shop order, or you'll get 50% off if you've actually subscribed. So that's londonsockcompany.com. And let me know how you get on with that. I'd love to see pictures of you in your socks. Not just in your socks. I'd like to see pictures of you wearing the socks. Anyway, I am back next week. I've not quite decided whether to bring you another interview or a solo show. It slightly depends how the week goes and what I've got time for. But, tune in next week and it'll be a lovely surprise. With that, let's go over to the lovely Ivy Palmer so that you know how you can stay in touch with us here at Punks in Suits.
We'd love to hear from you. You can stay in touch with us on Twitter at Blair Palmer, by email blair@thatpeoplething.com, and our newly renamed Instagram account, which is now called A Brilliant Gamble. And if you go to the website www.thatpeoplething.com, you can sign up for our newsletter. You'll get articles, tips, and provocative questions straight to your inbox. And a free exclusive 5-part series written by Mummy covering the main themes of Punks in Suits concept and revealing her dirty little secret. Ooh! Hug!